Welcome to Watermark's Church Leadership Podcast, a conversation with church leaders for church leaders. I'm your host, John McGee. Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, welcome back in the studio again today with my friend Dave. Welcome back, brother.
Hey, John. Good to be with you.
So we're continuing our series on things we didn't learn in seminary. Yes. So this is episode 3. So apparently there was a lot we didn't learn.
I must have missed a lot of classes and not paid attention when I was there. I don't know.
We spent a lot of money, a lot of time, and yet here we are making multiple episodes about things we didn't learn when we were there, which, you know, if you missed the first two, it, as much as anything, it's kind of an excuse for us to talk about some of the things that we've learned along the way. It is about, you know, things that oftentimes seminary doesn't prepare us for, but as much as anything, just some categories as leaders, as, you know, guys who've been doing this for a while, things we've learned, some things that other people, we realize not only ourselves, other people weren't really prepared for as well. And so we're just kind of talking about those.
So much of it is just on the job type learning.
Yeah, that's right. So today we're talking about basically kind of this art of leading ourselves, self-leadership. There really wasn't a lot, at least in, you know, in my seminary education, about how to lead myself. And so you went to seminary, you were a pastor, and then you also really have coached a lot of pastors as well. So that would be another episode, just all the things that you gleaned and working with other guys. But so from that perspective, Dave, when you think about just leading yourself, what is it that, you know, you weren't prepared for? What is it that those guys that you worked with and coached, they weren't prepared for, or a mindset? How do you want to kick us off today?
Yeah, I think the mindset idea is spot on, John. What I've noticed is I've got to coach different pastors, formally, informally, is we all kind of get to this place where we feel stuck in our circumstances. And in that feeling of being stuck, we sometimes lose sight of the freedom we actually have to make the necessary changes to get unstuck. So many times a conversation goes something like this: hey, I'm stuck, Dave. I don't know what to do here. I feel trapped. I can't get out of this situation. Do you have any ideas? And as we begin to brainstorm together, suddenly there's this awareness that leaders have that there's a lot more freedom that they have to make the changes they need to change to be effective in ministry. And so if nothing else, maybe we can encourage some people today as you're not as trapped as you think you may be.
Yeah, that's good. Do you have an example of that? Is there like a recurring theme?
I've got my own personal example.
Okay, so you have the mic.
I remember one time, it was probably 6 months into having a new elder team. Great guys. These were guys that loved me well, knew me well, cared for my family. And I remember thinking before I went to an elder meeting, I just need to let them know there's some things I'm doing right now that I need to let go of. Like I need to stop. But I felt like it was going to be a confrontational meeting. I felt like I was going to have to maybe resign at the end of that meeting because they would be so disappointed in the things I didn't want to do. And so I remember going to that meeting with a lot of trepidation. I probably had a squeaky voice and sweaty palms and got through my prepared speech of here's the 3 things I'm going to stop doing. And they all smiled at me when I was done, and they said, "We're waiting for you to stop doing those things. Not very good at them. And why don't you let us do those things?" And kind of like, we were waiting for you to come to this realization. I began to understand, man, these guys love me, and I have a lot more autonomy in this role to do the things that I feel like I need. I don't want to do those irresponsibly, and I don't want to do those independently. I want to involve others in them, but there's just a lot more freedom in the role than I think I realized. And so, just an example. I've heard that over and over in coaching conversations.
Yeah, because you can kind of get caught in this doom loop, like this will never change. Yep. I'm not good at this. You know, and you also brought up, I was hoping this would actually come up today. You know, one of the things that I felt like the way the pastorate, the way leadership was portrayed was these are the 15 things that leaders do. And a lot of times as we, you know, grow up under other leaders, we want to be all the best parts of every single person that we have, you know, ever been around. And that is soul crushing. We cannot do that.
No.
And so I love
no,
that.
That is a trap.
That is a point in of itself, is to realize that there's probably only 2, 3, 4 things that you're like really, really good at, where you add inordinate value. You need to really surface those and lean into those and be kind of unapologetic about as long as they make sense.
Absolutely. And I think you can be good at the same thing as someone else, but do it differently still. And so many times, especially if you step into a role where you're not pioneering, you're moving into an existing space, you had a predecessor, there can be so much pressure to not only do it exactly the way that he or she did it, but do it, just absolutely be that person. And it takes you a while to figure out there's different ways of doing things. And I do have a lot of freedom to do things the way that work for me, as long as I am accountable appropriately so to others.
That's so good. Someone needs to rewind 3 minutes and listen to that again, because that I feel like that would change somebody's life and really give someone hope and freedom there. But I think, you know, one word I would just say that would encapsulate some of this conversation, Dave, is agency, a sense of agency. And if you will kind of, you know, move into situations and go, I've got control here. I can propose solutions. I think I need to be thinking about a way forward, not focus so much on, you know, why this isn't optimal for me or why this is hard. I think it's really, really good. And I would also say for those who kind of feel like in that, they're in this doom loop, having a friend who can give you outside counsel is really, really helpful. And there was something that was portrayed to me, you know, kind of in the seminary education, this Superman figure who didn't need help, who always knew the right verses and things like that. And that's just a myth. And a good friend, a counselor, a wiser, older, you know, kind of confidant can really help you untangle some of these things and help you think through the next steps. And generally what I found is people know the next steps. They just need the freedom to say it out loud and someone go, I had this lunch today, or it was this week. And someone, they absolutely knew what to do. And I asked them and they said, I think this is way forward, but I don't know. It's like, why do you not know? And so we just talked it. And I said, just do that. You know exactly what to do. And you could just see the sense of like freedom they had with that. So really, really good. Dave, one of the things, you know, you and I were talking about before we hit record was just even how to organize your life, your time, your ministry, energy. You know, we were taught how to prepare a sermon. And then there turns out there's a whole lot more that comes in your inbox on that. Yep. So any thoughts on that? Just how to organize all of this stuff?
You know, I strongly, and maybe we can drop something in show notes if that's appropriate, but I think having a rule of life is so important.
Good.
And by that, I mean thinking through the entirety of your life and having a sense of purpose in your relationships, in your ministry, in work, in your physical life, in your spiritual life, you know, kind of a comprehensive look at life. That you're reflective. You know, a lot of leaders just don't reflect enough. There's a flow, there's a current to ministry that we get caught up in, almost like a riptide at a beach, you know,
yep.
And the next thing we know, we're drifted out to sea and you got to take time and really think these things through. But the most effective people that I've met in ministry are really intentional about everything they do. And so I do think we have to figure it out. And the unique thing about ministry is it's not like other jobs, John. I don't know what your experience has been. It's not like something you just check out of when you go home and then you check back in. It's not a factory job. It's not, I can leave it there. A lot of the things we do are enmeshed in our relationships. They're involved in all of life. And so we take them home with us and they tend to bleed into all aspects of life. So it's really important that we have a very clear sense of what does it mean for me to be spiritually healthy? What does it mean for me to be who I need to be to my family? Who am I when I am in ministry? Who am I outside of that? How can I be healthy? How should I sleep? You know, what should my weekly schedule look like? So all those things go together. Then the other thing I think we don't do well is we don't understand that ministry is both content driven. So there's this sense of there are tasks to perform. There are things to read and write and study and speak. But it's always in the context of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
There's relationships that have to be. And so that kind of that we're content and context of tasks and people come together is so important. My experience has been, again, in my own life, but also working with a lot of other leaders, is most of us do way too many things with way too many people, and we feel the effect and probably the downside or the dark side of being really, really busy, but not very effective, mm-hmm, and not very mm-hmm. influential.
Yeah, that's right. So I think what I heard you say, and I completely agree with this, is I actually had a class where, and I think we talked about this in one of the episode, maybe one, vision, mission, values, those kinds of things, you know, so for your church, and you put it all on a piece of paper, which is actually a really helpful exercise. But I think what I hear you saying is that most guys don't do the same thing, the same hard work for themselves. You know, what is it that, what are the two, three things I'm going to do? When I think about my family, you mentioned your family. What are the, and I'll share mine when future episode here, we'll talk about kind of, you know, what we didn't learn about our leading our families, loving our families through, you know, this ministry journey. You know, Pam and I have a very specific set of, you know, kind of goals and things like, and it really does helps us kind of cut out the noise and it keeps us focused. And so the same thing in your role, if you can say, these are the things that I do, and this is what I do, this is what I focus on at the macro level, it's just going to give you so much clarity and you'll really will move balls down the field so much further, so much faster than trying to do all of them, you know. And I think just even prioritize, just this idea, it sounds so simple, I know, but just to prioritize your time, your week, and focus on the things that have the highest ROI. And generally, those are the things that are the most difficult and the things that you don't want to do, I have found, right?
Yeah.
There's this, you know, sure. This idea of, you know, Stephen Pressfield's like resistance. There is this, and that's how you tend to know what it actually is you should focus on, is when you find something that feels like, I don't want to do that. It's really, really hard, you know? And so there's an old book, and I can't remember. It's one of the guys that would, you know, talk about self-improvement and really more about like time management. And he had this analogy of eating the frog first thing in the morning. Have you heard this one before?
No, it's so good. Gross,
this is gonna help somebody here. So, you know, it's an African proverb, I think. It's, so if you eat the frog, the proverb goes something like, if you eat the frog first thing in the morning, then you can rest assured that, you know, nothing worse will happen to you all day, right? And so eat the frog first, and now you're running downhill. And the same principle applies. Every morning you wake up, and you know, you probably know, or you should know, what's the one thing I should do that will move the needle, you know, more than anything else. There's lots, I mean, there is a relentless stream of emails, meetings you could go to nonstop, you know, things you could read. But there's probably one thing every day, sometimes it's two or three, but really it's kind of one thing that will have an inordinate impact. And so I remember we read that, you know, book or article with my team years ago, and that was a question we'd ask each other, have you ate your frog yet? You know, and so before you start everything else, you know, that you want to do, what's the one thing that you must do? And so it's just those types of things, I think, that you have to learn. You talked, you know, at the top, this on-the-job training, but you've got to organize your life. You've got to organize your ministry. You've got to get clear on what it is that you do. Focus on those activities and not just stay busy, because you can stay busy and really see no movement and really in any category in your life, your ministry, your family. You're just busy. And the wise, thoughtful leader will take a step back, prioritize. And we just didn't learn that.
No. And I think added to that, that's just as challenging, is not just answering the question, what do I do here? But also, who am I responsible for? And that's what tripped me a lot in ministry, is that I could tell, if someone was coaching me and they were to say to me, Dave, what are your priority relationships as you're leading this church? And I would list, here's some elders, here's some staff, here's some people that I really need to care well for. And at the end of the, whatever the time period I was to track my time, how much time do you spend with those folks? I didn't spend any time with them.
Right.
I'm caught up with responding to the urgent needs that are in the church. And the next thing you know, the church is really stagnant because relationships aren't being stewarded well. And particularly the leader is not prioritizing the most important relationships. And so I ran into that all the time. And I finally found a dear friend of mine who just agreed every year he would hold me accountable. Here's going to be your... And I have a very limited capacity. You know that you and I are friends, so you know that my relational capacity
is
very limited.
But yes,
no, it has. We all have limits.
That's a fact.
He would give me a limit of here's your 12 guys. I don't know if it's because Jesus had 12 disciples. He wasn't equating me to Jesus, that's for sure. But the idea is, and I want to know. You know, I want to know throughout this year what you've done with these. Like, what is your plan to invest in these people? Because oftentimes when I see leaders that are ineffective, it's not that they're not doing okay with their tasks according to their priorities. It's they're neglecting the priority relationships they have in their lives in order to move the church forward. And it's difficult because, again, you can have that trap sense, John, of I'm at the mercy of whoever's gonna come up front for prayer next. I'm at the mercy of whoever's gonna interrupt me between services. I'm at the mercy of who's gonna email me, who's gonna text me, who's gonna knock at the door if I have an old school office, you know. And the reality of it is, you have more responsibility and authority, I think, than you may realize, to really set up your ministry in a way that you are confident that you're pouring the most of your energies into the people God has called you to do that with.
Yeah, so good. Yes. I mean, I think that the, you know, seminary education was this one-to-many preaching was really kind of the focus of it all. And I agree, Dave, that if we are not careful, we've spread ourselves completely thin. We've not gone deep with anyone. We've not invested, especially as you get older. You have a responsibility, a stewardship responsibility, to take what you have learned, the mistakes you have made, and invest in the next generation. And if you don't do that, if you don't put that on your calendar, if you don't prioritize it, it just will not happen because of the relentless return of Sunday and all the other meetings. I think that's really good. And I think there's also just a lot of joy, candidly, that will be found, especially, you know, as you get older. I totally agree. It's was it Robert Coleman, Master Plan of Evangelism?
Oh,
that book's like 2,000
classic.
Years old, you know, and it hasn't got any more complicated or any more effective since then. Get some people around you and invest in them. When we're talking about organizing your time, leading yourself, you have to make sure that those rocks are there, and that, you know, whatever other your most important relationships, you know, that they are reflected on your calendar. You can tell that they are important relationships because of your calendar.
Yeah.
It'd be a really good exercise. Open up your month and say, write down what are your most important relationships. Look at your calendar and see if there's congruence there.
And we see this. We see the effects of not doing that. And so many of the surveys that you and I get to look at, we share them. We text them to each other.
Yes.
We share them. Is that a common thread in ministry leadership is I'm exhausted. I have spent so much time with so many people. I am.
Yeah.
I'm worn out. And I'm completely lonely either. I don't have any friends. Well, how does that add up? How does that make sense? It only makes sense if what you're doing is you are superficially investing in a lot of people at the expense of going deep with a few. And again, I tell people I coach all the time, effectiveness in ministry, when you realize it is really doing fewer things, and those fewer things are really the things that you're supernaturally gifted to do with the priority people in your life. Yeah. And if you stay with that formula for a while, you will see incredible impact. If you don't, you'll be tired and things will be ineffective.
Yeah, there is, like, you walk into some churches and, you know, it's senior pastor, it's the discipleship guy or whatever, and he's been there, you know, 20, 30, 40 years. And he may not be the most dynamic individual on the planet in the church, but boy, you just see it, you know, and you bump into people and tell me your story and how did you get here and what's been catalytic for you? And they keep mentioning this same person. And you realize that this guy has been head down, focusing in on a few people. You know, sometimes those people change, but he's been doing it over a long period of time, and there is tremendous fruit. It's so so healthy, so good. Not a rabbit I thought we'd chase, but I'm really glad. But I'm really glad we did. Okay, I want to switch gears on you. So I want to talk about your own spiritual leadership. You know, really for your own self and your own soul. And I would love your take on this question here. So a lot of people, a lot of messages, a lot of classes, a lot of, you know, sermons to other pastors and leaders have kind of presented this this model that you prepare sermons, talks, whatever it is, and then you have your own spiritual life. So you've got, you know, you have your quiet time, Bible's open, you're reading, you're listening to Jesus, praying, confessing, and then you prepare for sermons. But those two really need to be kind of like hermetically sealed off. They can't can't touch. Almost like they would arc and they would spark and something bad, you know, would happen in the universe.
Disastrous,
so that's kind of, I feel like I've gotten that message so many times. I'd love your take on that one.
Yeah, I so disagree with that philosophy.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think it's a terrible idea to preaching is such an act of worship, and it's so personal, and it's so much about connecting to God through his word, interacting with him through his voice in his word personally, and then sharing that with the people you love and you live around on a regular basis. Yeah. And so I think early on, John, I was so overwhelmed by the technicalities of preaching, that preaching was a very process-driven, mechanical thing I did that, you know, I was thinking of all the things we did learn, and I don't think anybody taught us not to be spiritual in our process of preaching, but that's the approach I took, almost like devotional life is for home.
Yep.
When I come to the office and the study, I'm here to crank out a sermon.
Yeah.
And so I began to watch my spiritual life dry up. There was almost this duality of here's who I am as a follower of Jesus personally, and here's who I am as a pastor. And so what really began to integrate those two things was just devotionally studying the word of God so that I could effectively preach it. I still looked at all my Greek tools. I still looked at grammar and syntax and all the commentaries I needed to. I didn't do that, but I did that from a place of devotion and worship. And man, the Lord just met me in that place. So I, you know, you will remember this. You and I are older. You remember the Chariots of Fire film where Eric Liddell was asked, like, why do you run?
Where the music as just cued in my head. It can't not.
There you go. You're welcome. It'll stay with you all day, too. You won't be able to shake it. But, you know, Eric Liddell is asked, like, why does he run on Sundays? You know, he's going to be a missionary to China. He says, when I run, I feel God's pleasure. Yeah. I got to the point in study, and still to this day, when I study, I feel the pleasure of God. You know, there's just such intimacy in opening up his word and not looking at it mechanically, not looking at it detached from my own life, but really first and foremost, Lord, what are you saying to me? How does this shape our relationship? And then expanding almost in concentric circles out. What does this mean for the people I love so much? And what does this mean to the people that are going to come through the door for the very first time? And so it got to the point that when I shifted roles and preaching was no longer the primary thing I did in a ministry role, my devotional life had to be reset because much of my devotional life was born out of preaching. And I had to go back and think, okay, I'm not preaching anymore, but it doesn't mean the Lord has left me. I still can go back and connect to him in other ways. So I am a huge proponent of taking a devotional approach to the pulpit. And I don't know, this may be, you press back on this. Yeah. I think there's times when you hear people where you feel like, hey, it feels like you're talking about somebody you really don't know. Sounds like you're sharing an experience that you haven't personally had. And there's other times like, I think you've been at the feet of Jesus all week and I can't wait to hear what you have to say. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. In the universe of questions, you know, we could have started with or onto this topic. I don't know why I just picked this one, but I always felt like, no, I don't buy that. I don't buy that dichotomy. And I have had friends that say, I can't do both at the same time because if I'm preaching, if I'm studying to preach, all I think about is illustrations. All I think about is the outline, and I just can't focus on myself. So if that's you, know thyself, you know, and don't. But for some people, I just want to say, be free and see them as very congruent. And I completely agree with you, Dave. I would rather have someone open up God's word that I really deeply believe has been wrestling with this personally, that they know the person of who this is talking about. And then they speak out of that. And if their points aren't quite as polished as the other guy, I'll still be more convicted. I still want to act. I will still be thinking about that individual that I know has been wrestling with this, thinking through this, praying for this themselves personally, and now they're going to share it more corporately. So I just want to free up someone who's out there and they go, golly, I've got to put both blocks on my calendar. Like, you don't. But you do have to figure out what feeds your soul, because oftentimes, you know, the role of a pastor is to feed other people, and you know, and if you're not, you're not attentive to yourself, you can become the proverbial skinny chef, you know,
and
you
want
whatever it is, you know, whatever. I mean, last night I went to bed with a passage from Dallas Willard, and it was just good, and it was convicting, and I won't teach that anywhere, but I just need some of that for my own soul. However, I could take that and I could turn it and twist it, not twist it, but I could massage it, repackage it, and share it with someone, and it hopefully would be beneficial. So go ahead.
I remember one of the most sobering experiences in my ministry life. It was in a season where I was a part of a church that was making a transition, and there were some video concepts to what we were doing. And so a sermon would be recorded, then we distribute it to other satellites. And I had to cover four Advent sermon series individual episodes back to back to back.
Wow.
So we got everybody in the same room. We set up all the technology, go preaching to an empty room. And I had through the second sermon just this horrific, sobering thought. And that is, I have no depth to draw from now. And if I don't have any depth to draw from personally, I'm shortchanging the people that are here. And I'm not only, this is not only hurting me, John, this is potentially stunting the growth of people that Jesus loves profoundly. And I really was in that moment of resolve. I can never let this happen again. Even if it means I have to say, I can't do this series. I need some time to build some more depth with God, more intimacy with him before I come back in the pulpit, then I would do that.
So it's kind of like you build up this one, you know, I feel the metaphor I've got in my head is you're loading this cannon, you know, all throughout the week with all this stuff, and you fire it, but now the cannon's empty, and you got to come back, and you can't just do that episode after episode after episode there. We can jump off this one. I would just say, Dave, one of the things, I do feel like, you know, there were some, you know, some energetic old men who yelled at us in seminary to tend to our devotional lives, and they were right.
They were right.
And I think on this one, you can actually fake it you know, I'll say it out loud, probably longer than most would think, but it eventually will catch you.
Yeah.
It will catch you. And so if you're looking for, you know, a health analogy, you can, whatever, let your cholesterol go and have a great time, you know, for a while. It will catch up with
It'll
you.
Get you.
And this one will too, friends. You know, it's not just your own personal life that's at stake. It's the lives of others. And the way that you show up, because you have depth or you don't, you know, is really, really important. The stakes are really high. And so just make sure, as you think about leading yourself, that you are, whatever it is going to put, you know, wind in your sails, or basically, you know, stir your affections for Christ, be unapologetic about that. Prioritize that, even if it means you have to do something something less. So, Dave, let's think about, I'd love your perspective, dealing with kind of your own wounds, motivations,
yep.
shadow sides. So I've got a perspective, but I think because you've had so many cups of coffee with leaders, I'd love to start with yours.
Sure, and my own story is has a dark side to it. You know, I think what I didn't realize early on in ministry was the complexity of motive. You know, I knew I wanted to serve the church. I knew I wanted to honor the Lord. I knew I wanted to see lost people meet Jesus. I wanted to see the people that knew him be transformed and grow. What I didn't know at the time is how profoundly motivated I was to validate myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it took a while, like years, John, before I began to see this darker shadow side to this, that what I'm doing really is trying to prove myself to others, and they're blind to it. So what's going on is they're cheering me on as I'm doing it. And you can really begin to be in this place of deception. So it took a while. It took a while for me. And I even met with a Christian counselor and worked through some trauma things in my life till I began to realize, like, hey, this is a pretty significant thread in my life. Like, I'm really always trying to prove myself.
Yeah.
And is the Lord working? He's doing what he's doing because he's sovereign and he'll do whatever he pleases with whomever he wants. If he wants to speak through a donkey, he'll speak through a donkey.
Yeah.
He's not stopped by anything. But I think I was doing real damage to my own soul in that space, even if the people around me didn't see it. And so as I began to take note of that and see that and ask the Lord to help change and brought in close friends to help me see that, there's just a new freedom that I began to feel and have. And so I think so many, I bet you could say the same thing, so many driven leaders who are powerfully used by God sometimes have ulterior motives in place that are hidden from others. And just like you said, you can't hide that forever. That eventually will come out. And when it does, take it from personal experience. It is painful.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So I think, you know, I had the class on, or the talk on, you know, personal integrity. I had that one. We probably went to multiple chapels and, you know, somebody yelled at us to, you know, live lives of holiness, which was really helpful. And I didn't get a whole lot of teaching and training on this. And this is one for myself and with others. Like you said, most people have a dark side. I would just say people have dark sides.
I would want to
rephrase that. And so let me just say this in case somehow you think you're immune. One, you have wounds. You have wounds that drive you. So you, some of the most driven people I've ever met, especially in ministry, have deep dad wounds, and they've never looked under the hood there. They've never gone back and talked that out. They've never gotten healing, and it is just driving them, and it's a dark energy. Two, your motives are mixed. They just are. Now, you can have mostly pure motives, but you have to know to not fully trust yourself. You have to be really, really sobered and know that you have a selfish, prideful part of you that will continue to pop up that you have to keep, you know, in check. And you have to know that you are not immune. You're not somehow different. Your motives are mixed. And if you don't understand that, you start to do things and give yourself a pass just because you're doing them. You think your motives are pure and they're not. And you really, really have got to understand, you know, what's driving you. What are the motivations? What do you want out of this relationship, out of this initiative? And then three, you need to understand that there's a dark side to your gifting. So, you know, big gifts cast big shadows. And there's something that you're really good at. And maybe you're really good at rallying people And which is great. You should lean into that. But know that you can then take that and rally them to a cause that is you-centric, a cause that isn't wise. And you have to understand that, or you're really bold. Well, the downside of that is pretty obvious. You can just crush people, and you have to understand the dark side of your wiring. And I don't remember talking about that, but I really do. I would restate that. I think what I just said was one, you've got wounds, and especially guys in ministry. So many people went into ministry because of a dad wound. It's
a significant majority.
Yeah,
I'd
love to know the stats on that. So you've got wounds, deal with them. Two, your motives are mixed. Be aware of them. Be sobered. Tell other people that your motives are mixed. Ask them to keep you accountable. And then three, really begin to look at the dark side of your biggest gifts, because you've got them. You somehow can do damage, which is so crazy. With and through these incredible gifts that God's given you. And part of leading yourself is going to be, you know, really dealing with all three of those. Yeah.
No, that's super helpful. And, you know, for me, John, there was just deep insecurities. You know, that there was this, a lot of where I was about was insecure. And so ministry was for me the stage in which I could overcome those insecurities. And that's just a dangerous place to be. And so, you know, flip side real quick, and then you press back on this because this may be wrongly stated. You said this well. There's never a point in time I've ever experienced where my motives are 100% pure. So if you're waiting for that time to happen, to take action, to do the things God has called you to do, I'm not telling you to not do that either, right? I think we can become passive sometimes paralyzed because we have these mixed Scripture gives us biblical categories that will determine for us whether or not we're qualified or not. And we always invite community in to speak to these things as well. And there are times where you know, even to this day, you and I've talked about these privately, where I'll have an opportunity and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I should do it because I still have this insecurity I'm trying to work out. I'm like, well, or maybe what you should do is use this as a growth opportunity to press forward with that. So I don't want anybody to take away what you and I are saying is don't do anything until you get it all together. We're saying is one of the ways we lead ourselves effectively is ministry is for us an opportunity to do some deep work, invite others into that deep work, and grow as we go.
Yep, that's right. And there's such a difference. You and I have both seen someone who's incredibly gifted and just, you know, man, they are in motion, things are happening. And then that person really latch on to some of the things we just talked about, you know, wounds, dark sides, motives, and they really begin to, you know, kind of deal with those things. So then they show up, they're the same gifted person who has gotten some healing, they've gotten a lock, and they're scared of some of their own motives. They understand the dark side of how they operate. And then they do some of those, the same activities that they did previously, and there's just a weight to them. There's just a gravity to their leadership, to their teaching, whatever it is, and it is just materially different. And so that's a journey. You can't get there overnight, but I would encourage you to get on the journey. As you think about self-leadership, it's not just about optimizing your calendar. It really is about, about your own soul. Let's do another. I feel like we're in a car and I'm shifting without hitting the clutch. So I'm going to grind the gears again. One of the other ones, you know, that we wanted to talk about was just the importance of physical health.
Yeah.
Didn't have a class on that one.
No, we didn't have PE, did we? At least at DTS when I was there. Maybe they do.
Which
now.
Would have been amazing. Yeah. Dodgeball for pastors.
Oh, could you imagine the rage that would have been taken out in that? That might have been scary.
I would have taken that class
Because pastors are never
twice.
Competitive, are they? That's not part of our problem.
That would have been amazing.
Yeah, I don't know about that. That could be difficult. I learned this the hard way too. I think, and again, I'm 58 today. The day I turned 35, something changed. Energy depleted.
Interesting.
I woke up every morning sore, as if someone was coming in the room while I was asleep and just pummeling me in the night. All the weekend things I do, church softball games, you know, on a Saturday, you know, would take me a week to recover before the next game. And so, energy began to drop. And energy is so important, because one of the ways we love and serve other people is using our energy to care for them. And so I really am a strong believer in finding what works for you, but having consistent, regular exercise in your life, eating right. Sleep is a big thing that we overlook.
Yes.
You know, sleep. So when I am tired, I am edgy, and I'm also super vulnerable to my to the sins that I struggle with. And so, you know, just being tired is a really dangerous place for me to be spiritually as I love and serve others. And so really thinking through, like, what does it look like to go to bed at the same time every night and get up at the same time every morning, whether it's Monday or Saturday. And so those are really important things. I know you are very physically fit. People probably can't see you right now, but I know you work hard to stay in shape. What have you found? How does that help you? How does that help you in ministry?
Work hard is, I would agree with that part of the equation. I've got so many thoughts here. When you talked about sleep, I do want to say this. When you think about ministry regrets, you know, things you would have done differently. This sounds crazy to say. I would have slept more.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
I would have gone to bed earlier. I would have let some things just wait till the morning. I would have not worked as hard, you know, on some of the things. I just went, especially in my 20s, I just thought sleep was a nuisance. And it slowed me down, and I didn't like it. And looking back, you know, if you've got these little flash points where you're like, I was angry here. Well, a lot of that could have been mitigated just with sleep, you know, or my soul wasn't in a good spot. A lot of that could have been mitigated with, you know, 8 hours for a week, period. It wasn't so much a spiritual issue. So sleep, what you eat, understanding, you know, how things affect you. But I do think thinking about this as a stewardship, a long-term play. And especially when you're young, putting deposits in the bank, you know, now, which is actually a metaphor that's, you're starting to see a lot of health experts talk about, that it's kind of like saving, you know, in your 401k. And so you want to spend it all now, but if you will invest it down the road, you're going to be really, really glad that you did. So your health when you're young is really kind of inconsequential, because you're Superman, and you'll never be sick, or you'll never, you know, have any type of heart disease, you'll never, you know, whatever, have an injury that doesn't heal, that just won't happen. But if you will acknowledge that is happening, put some deposits in the bank now, that you're going to be really glad when you're older, which is not just about your own, you know, personal joy, happiness. Of course, won't it be fun? I really do want to be able to play with my grandkids. You know, I want to wrestle with them. I don't want to just show up with a cane and come hobbling in and sit down and take a nap, you know? So that I've got this envisioned future of that, but also just your ministry, you'll have something more. You'll have all this wisdom as you age, but sometimes our bodies aren't, you know, able to kind of deliver any of that wisdom. And so that's a big part to me. Another thing I would say is, I would have picked something that I could have stuck with easily. So I get, there's a part of me kind of leading myself. I do really well when I have something new, a new challenge, and I love to do hard things. So I love to run marathons. I love to, you know, do some big challenges. And then there's a little gap then until the next one, you know, and if I'm not careful, I will completely fall off, sure. You know, the wagon,
totally,
you know,
sedentary.
And, you know, three bags of Cheetos and, you know, NFL game. And so I think that, you know, I would have picked something that's like, this is what I do. This is my baseline.
Yeah.
This is what I eat. This is how I exercise. This is how I sleep, like irrespective. Now, if I want to add something to that, if I want to train for a big hike, if I want to try to increase my bench press, that's great. But there's no circumstance where I won't do this. And this, whatever this is very doable. It's not soul crushing in some way. I would have made something easy so that it would have become likely. And I would have just continued down. I would have set a baseline that would be different. And then the other one, I feel like somebody's mom here, but get a physical, like all of it, all the things, whatever you are, and get your blood work done. And, you know, if you're, once you're older, there's other test and things they need to do to you, and don't wiggle out of them. Do that, because so many things that kill us we could have prevented if we just had,
that's right,
had someone tell us you've got this thing. And I forgot the percentage of men who just never get physicals. It's, you know, it's really, really high, and a lot of that stuff's preventable. So I think it's good stewardship of your body that God's given you, the influence that God's given you, and then thinking about the future, the stewardship of the wisdom you've collected that you can share. And so I just encourage you to really pay attention to that, but don't make it an idol. I guess we also, some people are swinging now, and you know, you just don't need a six pack to be a good leader and a good pastor. You don't.
Right.
You don't. You should probably take care of yourself. Well, I say that to probably soothe myself. But, you know, you can be in shape and not have to be on the cover of some magazine to be a leader sometimes.
Well, and I think, John, there's good reason for this. Why do we want to be in shape? Well, you know, it's about everything else we do, too. We want to honor the Lord, right? We want to honor the Lord with the body he's given us. The body is important to the Lord. We want to serve well. I had a trusted counselor tell me one time, the most important thing I have to offer anybody was the way in which the Holy Spirit was engaging with who I really was and offering that to them. And to offer yourself to people takes energy.
Yes.
And a lot of energy is determined by who you are physically, not just who you are emotionally and spiritually. We are integrated. We are souls that are encapsulated in bodies. We are embodied souls. And so I think it was a part of my life I neglected for a long time and probably feel a little bit like I'm playing catch up today.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it's, which is pretty much everyone says that. Just try to minimize the, you know, the regret. Okay, Dave, I'm going to go public with our challenge this year. So you and I are attempting to, we threw this challenge out. So Ashley, who you've heard from before, she's on the podcast. What was that? 2-3 episodes ago. She edits all of ours. She passed on this. You said yes, but we're trying to do a Murph workout every week this year, or 50, we said. So, which is run a mile, 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, 300 air squats, run a mile. And so, and I forgot how I just frame that, like we're attempting to we're doing as much of it as we can. If it goes over an hour, just call time. So that is our challenge. I will tell you, those first couple weeks obliterated me.
You know, I probably need to come clean and say I had some regret and probably even some bitterness towards you that you even asked me to, but we're good now, brother. I'm good. So
you said yes.
Sorry to air that out right here and right now.
You said yes quickly.
I said yes way too quickly.
Yes. But that's just, you know, that's an example of just something that you can just figure out what would move the needle for you. How I'm more likely if I'm accountable to a group. And so, you know,
and it's been fun. I think just the interaction we've had with all the people, we have a text thread, and even this morning we got a really funny response that kind of made my day.
It was my daughter who, awesome. In college, who woke up at 5 a.m. and couldn't go back to sleep. So she knocked out part of a Murph and had some hilarious commentary. So that for me, if I'm doing it with others, that's part of what will make it more likely for me. So Dave, there's lots we could keep talking about, but I'll just kind of give you the final word here, and then we'll shut this one down here.
Yeah, I think if you haven't realized this yet as a leader, the greatest threat to your ministry effectiveness is you. It really is. Dude. It's not the people you serve. It's nothing else. It really is you. That's hard to admit.
Just say that one more again, because I want to make for me
the greatest threat. Yeah, the greatest threat to your ministry fruitfulness effectiveness is you,
dude.
And so I think the most important thing we do in ministry, in the role of a leader, is lead ourselves first. And the very first place we go is to Jesus and to really build a deep relationship with him. And then everything else flows from that. So that's my own personal experience. And I've seen that in the lives of so many other people I've served with. And if we're really honest, that's the big challenge. And the good news today is there's hope.
That's it. Yeah.
There's real hope.
Yeah, that's right. So when someone asks you, what is your greatest leadership challenge? You should reply, myself. I've got some other ones. But the hardest one is me. And if you keep that attitude and you keep that front and center, I think you have a really long, effective leadership run. And so, brother, thanks so much for your thoughts. This is more of an interview of you, and I learned a lot and was really encouraged. So thank you. Well, friends, we'll continue this series next time. But until then, if you have any questions, any comments, any ways we could help you, you can always reach us at clp@watermark.org. That's clp@watermark.org. We'll talk to you again next time.